This is a production of Cornell University.
Essay meeting, October 16th,
2008. I'm sorry, can you repeat that? Okay, so we have no approval of the minutes today.
No, we have it for September 25th.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Next item on the agenda, approval of the minutes for September 25th, 2008. Remind everyone, we are not reprinting those minutes, and we're not reprinting resolutions we were already given to conserve our paper use. So are there any motions?
Fund information. Would it be possible to have a couple of copies of old resolutions available for assembly members who are confused from previous meetings?
Yes. Noted. Yeah, sure.
Thank you. That'd be awesome.
Sure. Yeah, each week. We'll take care of that.
Also, if you haven't read the minutes, you should, because there is the clerk in charge. It's really commendable.
Call for acclamation. You have a motion. Is there a call for acclamation? There's a second. Next open microphone. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address the SA on an issue that is not currently on the agenda? All five of you? Yeah. All right. Moving on to announcements and reports. Before we get to the announcements that are on the agenda, one quick announcement. I'd like to congratulate Mr. and Mrs. Epstein on their recent wedding. Their
nuptials.
Their nuptials, yeah. Clap it up there. We wish you all the best and congratulations. Moving on, disability accessibility on campus discussion. That's by Vince Andrews, Catherine Fahey, Andrea Tainlin Mott, I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing it wrong, and Lynette Sheppel Williams. So, Vince, if you want to introduce our guest today, that'd be great.
Right now, we're doing a stakeholder review, and we appreciate the fact
opportunity to talk to you about the plan, and we hope that we are going to move along quickly with charging the plan leader soon. But Andrea is going to talk to you a little bit about our steering committee and then the business case for this plan, and then we'll go through what the framework actually involves. You guys have happy questions? We just want to know.
There are extra copies by Liz, but anyone doesn't have any.
Okay. Yeah, and we're just going through different aspects of it. The members of our steering committee are the executive decision group and the ADA coordinating team, and includes Steve Holden, Mayor Appleman, Murphy Carroll, and Lindsay, Steve Kong, Tony Adams, Lynette Chicago, Ed and Jupin, Kathy, Jim here, and myself. And this is we're pleased with the commitment, the level of commitment that we have from folks, as well as the sort of the diversity of interests represented on the executive committee and steering committee. We'll talk a little bit about that, but a lot of what is really important and the aspect of things that we're talking about with regard to disability aspect of things, ways of raising these issues in awareness, is what we're talking about. And it's not just the overall disability. Yes, we are on the side of a mountain, and a lot of our buildings are really old, so it's not as if it's an easy way to facilitate accessibility. So one of the things that we are really trying to do is build awareness of what disability means. And talking about demographics, there are just an estimate of that, but an estimate of 4 million Americans with disabilities. And that includes people with obvious disabilities, like myself and the chairs, but also people who have non obvious disabilities, learning disabilities, medical conditions, so asthma, allergies. If you don't think about in the traditional sense of being a person with a disability, but a lot of those issues, and we've seen extensively in terms of housing accommodations happening at these are expensive. So it's one of those things that we're trying to talk about how disability is represented in Cornell. And yes, we don't have a population of 30, 40, 50 students who use wheelchairs, but we do have a population. We have a large population of people who take advantage of disability accommodation on the campus that you may not be aware of. One aspect that we're trying to do is really fitting in aspects of disability in our university. And a lot of times people don't think about disability as an aspect of disability, but it is. It's one of the aspects of the plan and how we're trying to incorporate that. Yes, we're talking about compliance with the law. Because we receive federal funds and we had a responsibility to be accessible since 1974, the Rehabilitation Act and the American Disability Act. So the ADA applied to us as a private university, it applied to us as a state and local entity, as a state and local government. And so we do have requirements for that. One of the things that we are hoping to do is have this comprehensive strategic framework really meet our plan for not this, but when we are investigating. There are a variety of audits by the U.S. Department of Justice, as well as the Office of Civil Rights and the Department of Education, that are looking at post-secondary entities, determining how effective are. You can do federal funding for a period of time. The Americans with Disabilities Act now is 18 years old. How are you determining disability? And this framework will allow us to be able to say, we don't know. There are a lot of things we've done. And here is the context of our firm. This is what we're doing, but also here's our plan to do things in the future. And that's where, except the voices of audits, I don't think we can't really an audit. We know that it's probably in the context of our employee accommodations, in the context of our students, or as well as our facilities. And so that's one of the things that when that does happen, we want to be able to compare. We will be able to show this is what we're doing. so it's not me from Human Disability Services telling the people in the colleges how they have to devise their action plan, but they are growing that and putting that in place themselves. With that, having gone through the process of making a plan, deciding about priorities, looking at best practices by colleges, across colleges and universities, we feel that everyone is going to be much more informed about, you know, where do we have gaps in compliance, where have we made progress, how can we demonstrate that progress, know that progress, and where do we have to go from here. And just in the process of doing that, we will have created so much more knowledge about disability issues from these strategic areas that we've had thus far. So we're really excited about the idea that people will be coming up with their own plans to six strategic areas, and then the Executive Steering Committee has said that people who are administrators in charge of those areas, teams with the colleges, vice presidents of those areas will be the person who is ultimately responsible for the plan. So the goal of the plan then is to create more education about disability compliance across the university, to work in these six strategic areas, and it's then really making sure that people understand and how disability affects a student or an employee's ability to be integrated into our campus community, that we're building a community that doesn't include people with disabilities because we haven't known enough about what it is to have a condition or a disability that we, just by virtue of that ignorance, have it. So those are the goals of the plan. The six strategic areas are physical access, educational programs and services, technology, communication, and employment and emergency departments. And yes, as the ADA coordinator for facilities, is the leader of the educational or the physical access plan. That plan is a little bit, I think it's advanced. We have been working on the 2008 plan that we sort of use as a framework, and it will look different than any of the other programs. We've got 11 elements within that physical access plan, and include things like new construction reviews. Obviously, we're not going to be doing anything that's not a model of accessibility. Renovation reviews. We're looking at path and travel implementation. Last summer, we surveyed all the 2.4 miles of pathways on the campus. Our students, unfortunately, are really hot. So we had two students that did that this year. In summer, we surveyed all of the elevators and restrooms on campus. So we have ideas. We know where we're at. We know what we need to do. In terms of that parking, where are the accessible parking spaces and how do you get from point A to point B? Because I think in our mapping structure too, if we have parents, if we have grandparents that are here for commencement, taking advantage of accessibility, how do we, where do we come into the park? And how do you get, once you park, how do you get into the most accessible entrance? And how do we improve those aspects? And then all aspects of mapping structures as well as signage aspects on campus too. But where is accessibility? And I think sometimes it may not be the primary entrance to accessibility, it may be a secondary entrance, but it's the best text to create. And I've been at Cornell now 15 years, and I know how getting from point A to point B in terms of the accessible route. And I've been kicking people with new facilities and learning, how do you do this? And they're like, well, it's going to be a tougher way. But we need help. The accessible programs and services plan will be led by the deans of the colleges, and this is, will be a really complex plan because when the university first started, when you think about small colleges and undergraduates who go to class, and if you're pretty small, certain areas, live in a residence hall, everybody knew who everyone was. But colleges have grown so much. That we offer extension classes, 2 hours from here on how to be a farmer. That's a Cornell class. We have courses abroad. We have classes for high school students. We have workshops and speakers and so many different types of offerings that while I think that we have covered the traditional way that we operate disability services in a very efficient manner, what we are first of all looking at is the diverse ways that we are offering educational programs and services where there are possibly gaps in compliance, and also how we have looked at our policies and procedures to make sure that they're not discriminatory in any way, and also making sure that the people whose job is to provide accommodations and services are have the kind of resources that they need to do their job well, so that the students and visitors and employees who receive disability services have the necessary things that they need, and those resources are there for the people who provide them. So that's an important part of this educational program and services plan. The technology plan is looking at the way we web accessibility is a big part of that. There has been a web accessibility policy that has been going forward, and we hope that that will be approved soon. But also we're looking at, let's say, how television is offered in the residence halls, and captioning is available, how key card entries are those usable by all the different, a broad range of users. When you go into the large lecture hall, is it easily available to get a hearing assisted listening device? So we're looking at the way we use technology and are we being inclusive in those methods? The communication aspect of that is really how every aspect of what we do on the campus. I mean, this is our primary website, certainly at Cornell.edu, and that's how we're a lot of people from the outside and people exploring opportunities at Cornell and whether or not they would apply here, they look at that. And how friendly are we to disability in the context of that? And every other aspect of the communication system that we have. And again, for people with a variety of disabilities, a lot of times people don't think about the communication elements and whether or not we can, like web accessibility, we talk about that a lot. And sometimes people are like, what do you mean by web accessibility? And then for people who use different types of technology that, say they're blind, and they use JAWS, which is a program that reads the web page to them. If the page is not coded in a way that is compatible with JAWS, it sounds like, I'll just give you an example of it. It sounds like they're saying the same thing again. You have to go back, and or it may not be clear, but the person has no idea what information is on the page. So it's really trying to create things in a way that's accessible for people with a variety of disabilities to take advantage of. New tech, which is something that enlarges for people. Millennium and some of the other aspects of technology with respect to the information. How probably our telephone system is that we have PTY available to be not all employment and including student employees, obviously one of the more common areas and it's something that we do have a very comprehensive plan about how we provide accommodation, reasonable accommodation for our employees with a variety of disabilities. But it's just captured in that in the context of the plan. We couldn't certainly do this untriggered without that implement. And then the last and final one is emergency preparedness. It's really emergency planning and recovery and working with the Office of Emergency Planning to make sure that the comprehensive systems that we have in place are complete. What happens when you're on the fifth floor of a building and it's whatever time, and say 10 o'clock at night, and the fire alarm is there? How do you get out of that particular building? Where do you yourself and you need a wheelchair? Let's use that particular example. A lot of times, you may not know that you're there. How do you get out of the building? with a transient population. We have a person with a disability to be in there. And it may not just be a person in the wheelchair. What happens if you break a foot or the skin of a winter break and you're stuck on that? How do you get up? It's trying to develop plans not only for building systems, building coordinators, facility personnel, but also for individuals to know what do you need to do to protect yourself? What do you need to be planned for? So it's really that overall plan, trying to figure out where emergency planning and recovery systems are. So we have been doing our stakeholder meetings. We're getting to the point where they're charging plans, and we hope that the plans will be underway sometime next year. And so we hope that sometime we can come back and report to you about these plans and how they have been put together. And so if you have to think about this or in listening to our presentation, do you have any remarks or areas that we have to address or that you would like us to consider in revising these plans, we'd be happy to hear your comments. Yes.
Hi, my name is Rebecca Stein. It sounds like you're doing an absolutely incredible job. Thank you for coming for us. One of the things I would love to see addressed, though, is parking on campus. I was unfortunately a disabled student for about a month as classified by Cornell and New York State due to an injury, and I found it extraordinarily difficult to get around. CES is a wonderful program on paper, but unfortunately they're not available for all the hours I have class, they're not available for all the hours I have extracurriculars or other school programs, and they're not always so easy to get a hold of. Parking on campus, we have so many different handicap spots, but they're exorbitantly expensive, and not all students find that that's truly accessible to them. And while I had access to a car while I was hurt, I found I couldn't drive unless it was the weekend or, you know, it was after the disabled parking spots had run out late at night because I didn't have a courthouse parking permit. And I would love to see something done to address this, perhaps subsidizing parking spaces, because disabled students really do need to be able to access parking on campus.
And I think a real important part of this long-term plan is tied in with such important vision of a sustainable campus that has more transportation options, because no matter, we're never going to have enough of them. But if we had enough looping shuttle type of things that went in, say, Dart Avenue to Martin Van, or got into places that aren't reachable very easily by walk, and we have more living systems, I think that we would also expand the opportunities that people have for transportation around campus. Because I agree we could use more parking, but I don't know that we will ever have enough parking.
I didn't even mean that, although that's definitely a wonderful idea. I noticed that these spots seem to always be empty. And when they're not empty, it seems that there's one student sitting in the car while a friend runs into the building hoping they won't get caught by CUC today. It seems that there's a lot of handicap parking not being used. And I personally did not utilize it because of the price tag. And I have a feeling other handicapped students are in the same position.
I'd love to know where they are because I drive around campus for accessibility, and it's never finding
a
parking spot.
I'm in the arsenal. Yeah. We have at least 15 spots right there that are always
empty.
She's just
decided to make a loan.
I've been
9-11
for
15,
11 years now. So, I have to know that. I don't even know that you're in the right spot. But, yeah, and that's the thing. A lot of our staff is in the back. We take advantage of it.
Great. Thank you, Rebecca. Okay, before I open it up to the official speakers list, again, we want to reiterate, thank you very much for coming. Thank you, Vince, for coordinating them to come. Just before I open it up to further questions, I noticed that the executive disability group and the ADA coordinator team don't have, I guess,
designated student spots on those. I was curious if that was ever brought up or that was an issue, or is there just simply not a need for an official student position on that committee? I think this is great, and I hope we can give as much feedback as we can, and if anyone has any ideas or inquiries, please bring them up now. But just curious if it was felt that maybe perhaps a student should be formally on that team, or maybe it's not necessary.
What group that we had prior to that sort of fed into the executive committee or the steering committee was the task force on disability that did have representation from CUDA, Cornell Union for Disability Year. So that was part of sort of the steering group for that. But that's
okay.
The fact that we can simply get back to the committee. And I think what has led a lot of this report is that so many things have happened organically, that they haven't been very planned. And I think it's really an interesting idea to have that a more formal group that people can, that there would be designated spots for certain people. And I think they'll be very interested in that idea.
Okay.
And we have to have a more intentional approach to what we're doing, and that might be part of it.
Especially in the context of the different groups that are established for the strategic area. And I think that would be really helpful. I would love to, because I'm the same thing I'm going to do for ACCA. I would love to have presentations with students. We're having a designated spot on that for someone who has interest as well as some areas of expertise within the context of ADA.
Great. Yeah. No, thank you. And I know there has been a lot of development, with conversations about these issues. I know, the Sun had an Eclipse program devoted to that the other week, and I know I know there's a lot of student sentiment out there as well, but I think this is great. And so on that note, next on the speaker's list is Representative Andrews. Oh, no, I'm sorry. We speak like speaker's list to ask you questions, if you don't mind. Oh, no. I wasn't like... I'd have given you more of a positive thank you and goodbye. Not just like next.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't make that.
Exactly my question. If the city comes to us asking about accessibility and all that stuff, and if there's a liaison, a student liaison, or a suggestion box, or email address that we should refer them to, that you all look for or whatnot.
There are some the Student Disability Services website has a feedback form. So if people have an email address, you can email us and ask us questions, but there's also a feedback form. Somebody wants to send an anonymous kind of message to us, they can do that. There's a disability information website, and that website has questions that people can ask about disability issues.
VP Mezick?
Just a quick question about the parking permits. If you have a handicapped accessible tag or whatever they are, do you have to a state issue one? Do you have to get a permit on Cornell's campus to? Okay, so if a visitor were to come, they couldn't just park in a spot if they had a tag. Really? And how much do those cost?
I think for the half day,
$3.
$6.
We have a TIDR. I work there, yeah. It's $6 for half a day and $10 for a full day. And if you just present your tag, we put an H on it, and that, and you get
to give me like a secret.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's surprising that we charge people who already have a...
$40 a week. Well, but even without disability,
police department can't have a captive person to check into it. Certainly, the last, you know, everybody knows the first one.
It's not more if you want to park in a handicap spot or anything like that. It's the same. It's flat rate.
Okay.
And if you're open.
No, good. No, yeah.
3 hours later.
If you're a guest of admissions and you want to park handicap as well, that's, it's free. So that's a good thing.
So those are the okay. Randy.
I was just wondering what buildings are you looking at to renovate? Because some buildings that stand out to me as an accessible in particular are the low-rise. I think it's pretty apparent to move them there because people struggle with the back. I think for the low-rise themselves, it isn't a problem, but when you're dealing with like the international living center, you might run the risk of, you know, deterring people from living there or from the same next village. So I just, you know, Willard Street too might qualify as having
getting
renovations, so I was just
wondering,
like, what
the great question, and yes, really, we're looking at a ton of buildings and working with the folks at Campus Life on, we did a full accessibility survey of Rizalou, because Rizalou is not accessible at all, and different things. In Willard Street, we have Grand Plan, right? Grand Plan, Willard Street. athletic events and other events that are held there. The commencement building is incredibly young, but the fact that we have no facilities other than a platform that we usually for football season as well as for the cross season. We're looking at areas and balancing student areas and academic programs to make sure that certain things are done in a way that are just naturally accessible. Students are designed to for parents, you know, actually not just parents who have disabilities and grandparents, but also areas that are public money to visit. And we're looking at all of those aspects. It's one of the things that people come to they call to do stuff in accessibility improvements. There's a, I could go on and talk about aspects on the other class. The new student health services facility will be modeled with accessibility. We're looking at a lot of those types of areas, but it's anything that we're really looking at. We're not just sort of saying, okay, we're only going to look at art class, or we're only going to look at that class. But it's really trying to blend those in. And given that I'm located in facility services, I found out when people are doing renovation projects anyway, it's like, okay, this is a great opportunity to improve accessibility in the context of the community.
Also, I know that, you know, at any given moment, it's like over 10% of Cornell's population might be disabled. You said, you know, it might not be permanent, but temporary disability. I've never been disabled myself, but I was just wondering, if that were to occur, is there some sort of, like, registration with the university required to inform them, and then maybe then you could, you know, give them emergency exit plans and things like that?
Right. I'll let you talk about that. So, in the case of students, they can register in our office. We do provide many rides for people in the city. We lift over 6,000 rides last year. We give free bus passes and provide permission for handicapped parking, and then take away the fact that people don't have to pay for accessible parking. If you're an employee, you work through the employee number of the service. If you're a visitor, request accommodations from the handicapped office. So there are different levels according to what who a person is at the university. And who they
ask for and listen to their accommodations for. Great, thank
you. Next, Representative Brockman. Thank you for your time. I was wondering if you were audited tomorrow, what would be your biggest problem? Like, what are the biggest gaps in compliance that is right?
That's a good question.
But
audit
has
targeted that specific question. So if somebody actually questions an admissions process, and they could possibly come in and only look at admissions processes, that's a different answer to your question. Which is, where do you think our biggest gaps are?
I think, importantly, what we have in place are the processes for the staff of the and that we are attempting to efficiently address those questions of the client. If we didn't have those things in place, if people didn't know who to ask for accommodations and that information wasn't out there, that would be a big problem. I think that we have some very, maybe the standard area, but this is my guess, we have some very public areas that remain inaccessible 18 years after the ADA, many years after Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act, and I think those are our biggest area of vulnerability. We haven't done something to place the cultural cost in so long. What I've done for the last 2 years that I've been part of the facility services team is capturing what we have done and looking at the amount of money that's been spent in the last 18 years to be able to show and document that, oh, we have provided these things. And there aren't too many buildings that there are no accessible routes. There are some buildings where there aren't any accessibility. And so programmatically, we would be moving things if we need accessibility to accessible locations. I think our biggest vulnerability, just looking at large settlement agreements at Duke, Colorado College, University of Chicago, and Swarthmore, is they went in and looked at level of detail that requires accessibility modifications within 18 months or 24 months. That, I think, our vulnerability is the amount of money that we have to spend in a really short amount of time to make water pumps. And what I found is that we can't use water pumps as extensively as we see. I mean, they should be accessible, certainly, but I'd like to see our academic program taking, and that's where this plan will allow us to have a priority system in place so that we have a better approach to do it on our schedule and not on someone else's certain issues.
We just have four more on the speaker's list, and then we'll have to move on. Representative Engelmeyer?
Sorry. In terms of your focus on education programs, I know this is something that already offer, but have you all considered offering like ADD testing and similar types of disability testing on campus as opposed to sort of requiring that someone show up with a certificate who has already been tested? Good question. And it's something that is always the university currently provides for students who are holders of Cornell insurance, the Cornell insurance plan will cover an evaluation for a deficit disorder, but you do have to go off campus because there are not people that have to do those evaluations. And in my mind, there's some conflict of interest between having someone in a student disability services office both doing evaluations and deciding about it. And I'm not sure that the university, I'm not even sure that in the larger university area that it's really good for them to be doing the evaluations and then being responsible for the accommodations. I do think it's important that people, that the only people who can really access those sort of evaluations are people who support the students. So I think it's really important that we are making financial support available for accessing evaluations even more, in my mind, than providing the evaluations. So there are some support for ADHD, but the diagnosis of a learning disability is actually not a mental and psychiatric diagnosis like ADHD. It's an educational diagnosis. I don't know any insurance plans that cover an LMD evaluation. So for the students who have the most financial needs, financial aid will provide financial support, but I think there is a big gap of people who are not at the, that level of most needs who still would find it difficult to get a report,
And those are the people I think we have to make sure that we're focusing on and make sure that those evaluations, there we can find some financial support for them.
DP journalist.
Thank you so much for coming, by the way. I just had a question that's sort of more residence life connected. Let's say, you know, should there be like an emergency or something in the middle of the night in a dorm, who's kind of responsible for helping those students who are disabled? Is it RAs or are there other people designated, or kind of what's the process for that?
For students who are registered with Student Disability Services, and I think that there are temporary people who can fall into a gap there that we might not know about. We ask those students if they want us to develop an emergency evacuation plan with them. And some students do, and then we will meet with the resident life staff in that residence hall and talk with them about the emergency evacuation procedure for that student. And some students tell us, I can take care of myself and I don't really want an evacuation plan. And so, you know, it's that student, you know, privileged to decide that for themselves. But we do have a plan in place, and that plan involves information to people in residential programs, to environmental health and safety, and then the campus police. We brought in the fire marshal. We worked with the fire marshal on different plans for students in the past couple of years. So definitely have a plan right now. It's a little bit trickier, as Andrea said, in the places where they're not in the residence hall, where things are more familiar. So what we have done in the past couple of years is have the students meet with the building coordinator in that building so that they know when the student is in the building, you know, generally for a class, and that the student knows what the evacuation plan is for that building.
Great. And Representative Brass.
My question was just...
Excellent. Representative, yeah.
I'm just wondering if you could make some interesting decisions we have, particularly if we have possible places to make it, like, to save costs and make it less confusing, because that was talking about the only language that we just read, and since I work there, I think, I know in each floor we already have an emergency course, each floor which you can pick up and you read the information there. And I'm just wondering if you consider like make it like for the little time, 5 years or something like that, and instead of an extra form or extra other facility in addition to the facility we have.
The open library plan, renovation plan, is large. Are really looking to create areas of rescue assistance, which are areas that are fire rated beyond a period of time that will allow someone to do just exactly that. So in that, pick up a phone and actually go to, I don't think it would go to CU Police, I think it goes to EMCS, that would allow that person to indicate that I'm here, of where they happen to be. So they're not coded, required by the state building code in buildings where there's sprinkles. There's a whole sprinkler system within that. But I've been pushing for that to be able to be considered because, again, where you happen to be, that could be a significant advantage. Say you happen to be the only third, fourth time you've been there and you're not really familiar with the facility, or you're in good, and which is, you know, we shouldn't have to know that there are more special than others. So that's a great recommendation, and that will certainly know that as well. Those types of things, there should be signs that indicate that. Did I capture
it? Yeah, and in addition, as I get training as a student employee, we got a emergency event, and in this event, I think that we can make disability consideration and when we carry out this event. And it might be a good idea to add this responsibility to the
student. That's really helpful because, again, if you want to know if it's your responsibility to assist people and what is it that folks have to do, that's really, really helpful, and we'll follow up on that. Definitely. Thank you.
Great. Once again, thank you very much. We really appreciate the information you were able to provide today. And again, student input, if you think you need more at a certain point in the process, definitely that's what we're here for. And also, if you find some sort of liaisonship or a representative of the student, we can certainly provide that. It might not be someone here, but it definitely would be our job to find someone in the undergraduate community who at least is passionate or maybe even has experience with these issues. So please let us know. Thanks again for coming.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on, we're actually going to go to... Yep, we're actually going to go to an Ivy Council report by Alex Rotella and Ed Al, whoever else is helping present. Yep, it's about 5 minutes.
Okay. All right, so as you guys know, this weekend at Ivy Council, we met for the Ivy Council Policy Colloquium. This is not really a conference, but I talked about the presentation devoted to policy topics that are kind of this across the Ivy School. The format of this conference was slightly different than most other conferences, so for those of you who have had attendance in the past, what they have done is delegates from each of the schools committed to one of five policy topics. They spent the entire afternoon. There were many different discussions, talks about issues on respective campuses, as well as universities throughout the country and within the Ivy League. And then there was kind of a drafting session to reflect on these ideas, bring back possible resolutions to their student assembly, the student government, and so forth. And then in addition to that, something new this year is they invited cultural groups, cultural and LGBT groups, to come talk about their different organizations on campus, maybe how they can strengthen their organization and awareness on campus. And fortunately, Cornell did have one student that came from the group of Mosaic. So that was pretty good that did have representation from that. And then, so there were five policy topics this time around. Revisiting and re-engage is something that we've talked about here. Environmental sustainability, intellectual property rights, and free exchange of knowledge. Administrative transparency and accountability, and school spirit and social function. And I brought with me a couple of the delegates from the Cornell delegation just to kind of go over the policy and topics that they discussed.
Please state your name and year for the record. Hi, Sam.
Okay, hey guys, I'm Samantha Dunn, a sophomore, from 2011, and I'm with the president of the Council. So I attended an intellectual property rights session, and I was very session that I just talked about when we started school. So basically, we talked about two major issues. The first one is the copyright of the inclusion of intellectual property, meaning the zero, and whether they own the property or not. And it seems that for most universities, the policy seems to be pretty similar. So the author, whether it's a student or faculty, professor, they are the writer of their thesis, so they own the copyright of their property. But at the same time, the university also owns the copyright of the work. And they remain their right to either publish it or share it on the in the university community. Or sometimes if they want to publish it to the community outside the university, they will notify the individual and ask for and but it seems that for some university like Columbia, they said what happens to student research after they have left school, after they graduate, is some sort of ambiguous, and they have set up a committee to discuss and debate this issue, and this is the same problem that exists in other universities as well, and I think the same issue is and the second issue is about self-graduation, which is a major issue in intellectual integrity among academic life. within most universities. And the University of Pennsylvania, they have come up with an initiative, so this is similar to TurnItIn.com, and that's the idea. So this is a comparison to the submitted work with the text of shape of pieces to detect any suspicious similarity. But they found that because what they did is just they put other pieces, students throw at 10 and then compare it. But if students have resources from outside the North in Pennsylvania, it's still going to be an issue. So so combined with copyright as well as self-preservation, we think it will be really helpful if we can set up a database among all the IDs. So we can put the student pieces into the same database. It will both solve the problem for copyright if students will have the right for students to vote. And also it will solve the problem for self-preservation. So I think they put a resolution test on it.
And I'll touch on that resolution part.
Hi, I'm Charles Guell, class of 2009 at NARD. I'm also the VP of Internal Affairs for Ivy Council. I was in a session that discussed the school spirit and support activity. Overall, Cornell is at least on the higher end of participation. We are very much invested in our peer institutions. In regard to what we can take away from this meeting, one thing would be rallying this program where you can sign up for sort of like our support pack, so you can get articles about football, stuff or other type of apparel as you go to each game, and it costs $40 for something that amounts to $120 worth of value. I don't know if the Cornell bookstore would be too happy with that idea, but that's something that might be up in the air for discussion. In terms of school spirit, I found that Penn has an activity per year for each class year. They move up, for example, as the juniors transition to seniors, they have something called Hay Day. And all the juniors walk from one class to the other wearing a fake hay hat and red shirt and cane. That really helps us foster the school spirit. That's something I'll bring in front of the class council as well. But just a really quick overview of where Ivy Council stands and where it's going. Cornell has been a major factor in Ivy Council. The previous board of governor was Cornell Law, and Sam and I, two of the five executive positions right now are Cornell, and most of your current board members have attended at least one or more Ivy Council meetings, colloquium, stuff like that, and a lot of other members have too, and that's something that I really like to see you do. In comparison to our current institution, we have the strongest membership base in the state. The same people going over and over again, and continuing as you move up in your graduation to your department. Princeton has struggled for a very long time to keep their membership active because they restricted the Ivy delegation only to their student assembly members, which we do not. Brown, actually, this past semester, just included in their school student assembly constitution what the actual relationship that their delegation has with their meeting, and that's something we're trying to work with at other schools for now as well as part of our constitution. Our next big event is in February, the Ivy Leadership Summit. Hopefully, I will see many of you guys there.
Where is it this year?
Yeah, they haven't come up with a date yet. I'm going to talk briefly just on the topic.
I joined a discussion Saturday about lower drinking age, and here I just would like to relay the information I have to the SA and community members. In the meeting, we will examine drinking policies in university and what we can do about these problems. Finally, we come up with recommendations to the administration. Each college has different situations, while most colleges, Cornell included, are faced with volume problems. All campus relations, administrative generally do not have a conversation with local bars. Bars are suspicious of colleges. Colleges are suspicious of bars. In drinking, we drink to get drunk and sometimes get hurt and get other hurt. And in effective drinking education, we take all our alcohol bottles, we watch the examination bottles of penalty, but we still drink. In further discussion, we realized that then they failed to eliminate drinking accidents in college. To solve current issues, a change in drinking culture has to take place. To foster this change, colleges need to provide more engaging alcohol education, not aiming at eliminating underage drinking, which is practically impossible, but really at a healthy, enjoyable, and moderate drinking pattern. Dry lectures in alcohol-wise on how possible alternatives will be well-guided one-tasting courses, not only for those on age and other more practical experiences. Furthermore, we recommend colleges and local drinking venues to open a dialogue, develop friendly relationships, work close together to the institution. Another innovation in the drinking, instead of setting age, we set standards. And we make sure every student has sufficient knowledge about what's alcohol. Drinking recovery kids join parallel strategies. For instance, every time a person on your team ends the service, the person will get fined and audition. To get an example, can allow you to use our drinking club membership. I want to take ideas into the practical, but against introduction. Once implemented, this provides a great condition for launching and has potential to solve drinking problems that have troubled America for decades. Therefore, right now, we call for open talk and debate on campus about this idea. Collecting more tools and ideas, implement these ideas, and finally bring to reality.
Great. If you don't mind us moving on, can I clarify, will you have all this sent out to all the SA members? Yeah, I think it's all great information, and rather than just reading all off now, maybe we can send it all out, and then we can do what we want with it.
Yeah, okay, just in general, in case it's the sake of time and everything, IV Council is going to be starting to publish a newsletter, so all the things together, I'll be happy to send that out to you guys in PDF form once that is available. So there's a little more detail that I just want to give an idea of what's going on, maybe for possible resolutions and thoughts, please come to me with any questions. Do you want to talk a little bit about
Quickly, I moderated one of the sessions, administrative transparency and basically relationship with the administration. We came up on top, as expected. No, we're the only Ivy League school to have student elected trustees. Right. And just generally kind of compared our relationships, and we definitely have a very strong relationship with the administration. And I think we're also very lucky that our administration respects the assembly system and respects us being a part of the university governance process, where that is more of an issue at other schools. So we have that to our advantage. This all generally speaking, it'll be in the report as well. I wrote up a report on it. So.
And then just on sustainability, we all pretty much understand all the issues and think they're pretty much the same problem. The different campuses. One interesting thing to think about, Columbia has a recycle bank.
Great, thank you. And thank you, Alex, for coordinating the delegation. Does anyone have any questions before we move on for Alex? All right, great, thanks.
Great, thanks.
Next, we have, let's go to the Zimride update.
Just to let you know, Monday, Brian and I were in a conference call with John Zimmer, founder of Zimride, and alum, and Dean Coriati. Basically, City Transportation has a system that they use for ride sharing. It's mainly been utilized by the employees, and not even the employees really like it that much, and the students can't stand it at all. They get no use out of it. Zimride would be a much better system for us. Penn and Dartmouth have both written great reviews, and at Dartmouth, at Dartmouth, the student government, willing to pay for it, and at Penn, they've been lucky enough to have the transportation department there, or their business department, pay for it. It's about $9,500 in cost to start it up. We talked to John about maybe doing it for a half a semester trial period. Maybe we could lower the cost that way and try it. But unfortunately, the big option we have here is the transportation won't work with us. John indicated to us that it needs to be a student kind of initiative, so we need to, sit down with maybe Susan Murphy, the environmental committee, and get to work on getting student initiative on this. And then we should be able to implement it. I think it's a great idea, and we'll talk about more environmental committee.
Any questions?
Yes.
Quite a question.
Yeah, I was at the UN meeting yesterday for academic integrity, which I'll talk about in a sec, but I also brought up, they just sort of do assembly updates, and I brought up Zimride. So, that's another thing that we need to keep in mind is we can leverage those, the other assemblies, especially the UA, because it's a joint assembly among, undergraduates, graduates, faculty, et cetera, and really sort of work with the other assemblies to get some leverage with the administration if they're holding back. So keep that in mind, too.
How much would a semester trial cost?
For the year, the year contract is $9,500.
Okay.
And so it's at Dartmouth, for example, have to pay by student activity, have to pay the administration. UPenn is all paid by the administration. It varies. We'd have to explore. Dean Hubble, I'd like to start to put you on the spot, but do you happen to have any, over the years, has there been any issues involved with the system that we currently have? Apparently the transportation said, well, we have a rideshare system, the option available. It's not like Zimride, but Has this come up in the past, maybe? Has there been student dissatisfaction coming to your office? Just curious.
I haven't any recollection of anything similar. Back in the good old days, we had a ride board, right? It was right out here outside. It had cards in it. You'd shuffle the cards. Then it went online, I think, for a while. And I think that's probably the same that it is as well. So it could be time to look at something like Zimride, especially since it's quite a number of our. And if indeed students don't use what the transportation is set up, it could be adapting, and I think it's not a good case to consider setting up. Now, whether, we're in a really tight financial position right now. So if you think that there's a compelling reason to do this, you may want to consider funding it yourself. I don't hesitate to ask me or Susan to help, but I don't know if you can help all the way.
Yeah. No, without a doubt, we will work with you and Susan. We talked perhaps just for advice and seeing how we can best go about this bunch. That's where we're at right now. We are looking to implement it. So if anyone's particularly interested in being active with this initiative, I guess contact Emlyn or Tony or myself, but Emlyn or Tony. So, any questions? Oh, I guess I'm really explain. Briefly, generally speaking, they provide the software, they provide the marketing, they provide all the service. Basically, you can almost think of it as a Wikipedia for car sharing and ride sharing. So they you log on to the system. However, it's through the basically when you contract with them, it becomes through the university. So you use your Cornell ID and password. So that's why I guess it becomes more legitimate, more of a system of the university. And they do everything. We're contracting for them to provide the service in all aspects of it.
To add a popular feature that John mentioned, just take the integrated into Facebook as well. So in essence, you log on Facebook, you go on the university system, if you pay the full price for it, you sign in and say, Vincent, I need to go to Florida on this date. And then it'll match you up with someone else who's traveling in that route. And that way, you wouldn't have to try to do all the work yourself, and then match you up and have to cost for it, for the infrastructure mainly.
And to touch upon student support for it, there's already a Facebook group with, I think, a couple of thousand on it. So, any other questions? Had a long day. All right, moving on. VP Basil, academic integrity update. Sorry, there's no code.
Two things. I presented to the UA yesterday about what's been going on. As I've updated you guys on before, and some new, information coming over break. I, myself, Sanjeev, and Kate Duke are, along with Dean Fry, are going to be meeting with all the different heads of the different academic integrity hearing boards of each of the colleges.
I think either on the 29th or the 1st, 29th of October or the 1st of November. So in the next few weeks, we will be meeting with the heads of all the hearing boards and really sort of getting a baseline with how amenable they are to making some changes, and then we'll go from there. So once we have this meeting, we'll get a much better idea of how things should progress in the future, whether we'll be able to institute some changes for next semester, or whether we're going to be dealing with sort of an entrenched bureaucracy, so to speak. People who are still interested in this, you know, this hasn't dropped off the board. We're just waiting for this meeting to happen, and then we'll jump back into it. So, thanks.
Question? Just quick. You mentioned in the meeting with Finch and Kate that you have, like, a listserv going. Have you, like, for, like, get members on it, have you gotten that started yet, or?
No, I, contact you? Ari told me verbally that he was going to set up a listserv for the committee. I haven't yet followed through to set that up yet.
Okay.
Yeah, but there will be a listserv.
But, you'll let us know, and we can hop on. Great, thanks.
Any other questions? All right, moving on. Oh, can you also do the scheduling update now?
I can do that now. I just wanted to remind everyone for occasions like we had today where you're bringing in speakers, can you please let me know ahead of time that you're going to bring in speakers, not like 12 hours ahead of time or, you know, a couple hours ahead of time or 5 minutes ahead of time, so I can try to schedule people, you know, have Vince's people come at 4:45 and then Alex's come at 5:30, or, you know, 5:15, so that we don't have people waiting, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, just a heads up for all members. So, thanks.
Great. UA update by Representative Craig and Stein.
So, Chris Wilson had a UA meeting yesterday, and I think it was a very productive meeting, and UA continues to sort of work towards understanding, you know, where they want to go as a assembly body. One of the things that, again, is being talked about is a charter review, looking at reestablishing the way that UA works with their committees. Make sure there's more oversight and there's a lot of action going on instead of just we have these committees but they never work with religious life or things of that nature. Additionally, Chris presented a good amount of time to talk about the academic integrity drafting committee. We got faculty opinions on, you know, where should Chris be looking, what support should get from faculty, and how they should best proceed. So that would help us with some discussions. We also talked about the Cornell Review and the essay resolution that we had. This was a very interesting debate. Perhaps if we're working in the future, the university assembly members may be interested in working towards their own resolution, to making their own statements. Additionally, they're looking to hear more from us to work as a united assembly body. So I told them that I would send them out the exact resolution as was passed, because they did not have that or didn't really know about that. But they did have some opinions. Some people thought that it was wrong with the student assembly to punish the whole organization for the errors of a few. Other people echoed rights of freedom of speech, and these were faculty members and also employees of the university. So that would probably be an ongoing debate for the next UA meeting, so I will keep you updated on that. Would you like to?
Sure. You really touched on everything you said, except the graduate students mentioned that they had started an interesting initiative to try and train TAs better across the university. They would be working with the different colleges and perhaps even working towards some sort of program where TAs could earn some sort of certificate. So I think that would be highly beneficial to all undergraduates, and many of us have had problems with graduate TAs, and we can improve their teaching abilities, and we can definitely improve the academics.
Speaking of, we don't have a GPA survey on yet, do we?
Yes, Vince.
No, I mean like...
No. The other way around. We've solicited Michelle, and she has told us she's taking time to find it.
Okay. I just had a question. So there are debates about it. I mean, what are they exactly looking
about
to do?
You?
Yeah.
Okay.
So are they debating Resolution 6? I'm not sure what they're doing.
Okay. I was asked, just as I'm an SA liaison, so I was asked by Montana on UA to make a little update about what we have been doing.
Yeah.
This was
going to be talking about
making it in the past 2 weeks. So I was really just updating them about what we decided and what the resolution was.
Okay.
But they started going to debate about it, about whether it was right or to do it or things of that nature. So they're saying that maybe, you know, it's time for us on UA to make
our own statement. And so I'm saying, you know, I'll just make an announcement about what happened, and I'm trying to be as unbiased as possible on making this announcement. But because that happens, we should have this our own debate in the future, and maybe write our own resolution about it. Sure.
Okay.
I'll
keep you. Very productive. All right. Thank you.
See you guys.
Next, any other questions? And next on the speaker's list, next announcement. Oh, Mezzi. You hear Mezzi about a dining and trustee council update? There's a lot of updates.
So I was invited today by Lenormand Strong and Gail Finan to make a presentation to the trustee council. Or help make the presentation to the Trustee Council Committee on Student Academic Services. Specifically, at this meeting, Susan Murphy gave an update, and Lenormand gave a little bit of an update, and then we specifically talked about dining and where they've come over the last 10 years and the improvements that they've made. And the portion that I was able to speak on was the relationship between the Student Assembly, the Dining Services Committee, and the Dining Department as a whole, and how they've utilized the committee over the last 3 or 4 years as a kind of a focus group, and they've been very responsive. So they were very positive feedback about the positive relationship that we have with them. So just kind of wanted to let everybody know what was going on. And we're also having a meeting tomorrow at 3 o'clock. In Hughes Dining Hall, if anyone is interested. The dining committee is open to everyone who's interested. So just thought I'd throw that out there.
Any questions?
What? Hughes. It's in the law school. It's along the gorge side of the law school. It's the only one closed.
And then, Rami, can you give your Resolution 6 Academic Code of Integrity Committee update?
Although it's normal, we encourage anyone who would like to participate to come. We briefly looked over the code of conduct and see where we can reviewing it up such a zero, but so our next meeting will be next Thursday after the SA meeting. Let's say 7:15, we will be meeting in Golden Beach.
Yeah. Any questions for Rami? Holly McClure, question. Sorry.
I thought that it was the code of conduct.
It is.
Yeah, I was a typo. I was in academic integrity mode.
Sorry, thanks. Code of conduct. CIT issues.
Okay. So next week, Todd Fuller will be coming to discuss a couple of issues that CIT committee wants to get the FAA's opinion on. It's going to be the possibility of using e-textbooks instead of hard copy textbooks, which has actually been implemented in some other schools. And they also want to know about the possibility of notifying students. Tony, what was exactly notifying students of fines that they're paying for?
It was to notify them that they're being subpoenaed by the RIAA for illegally downloading MP3s and other such violations.
Dean Humble, it was a
great. Yeah, I know this has been an issue of concern in recent, and they've actually approached us about starting this dialogue, so Dean Humble.
As you know, university gets notification that an IP address has been identified as illegally downloading music files. And there's a question that has come up at other universities as to whether the university should move those letters to the students involved or not. One side of the argument goes that we shouldn't because we're complicit with the RIAA and doing their work, we become ethical actors. The other side of the argument is that if you don't, it puts you at risk because the cost of settlement goes up the longer you don't comply. So we felt that you as a representative body of the students ought to take the opportunity to make a decision to decide how you feel and advise us about whether or not we need to move on to or not.
And so just to be clear, so they the university can look up, and I was under the impression it could be just passed along ignorance. I was under the impression that they can't actually tie someone's IP address to that activity if you're in Red Rover. So they can identify.
No, they can now. They couldn't, I believe, last year.
Yeah, okay. You register with your.
Okay.
So.
So I mean, if you are at risk, there's no question.
Okay.
You're using your back home.
So certainly for more of a reason, then I guess we do need to have this discussion, Asa.
I was going to say I definitely need to work on the mountains or constituencies that that change has occurred. I'm a member of the same impression. So basically, immediately when a student downloads a song or a video or something, the school immediately receives an email?
No. Well, we don't know the secrets and mysteries of the RIAA. And they have a system where they notify universities that they have discovered that a certain IP address is illegally file sharing. And we are then, I suppose, asked, I'm not sure that's the right word, but they want us to pass that information along to the IP address, the student, in other words, who has done that work, and then there's a settlement letter that a student gets, which describes how you can settle early if you don't pay too much. And if you don't have that information, then as time goes by, if you don't respond, of course, then the cost of settlement goes up. So it's not a simple issue. The Chronicle of Higher Education actually had an article in it, issued perhaps a month ago, it might help.
Is there specifically about since we're receiving federal funding that now they that would be why they
no? Nothing to do with federal funding yet. The law that was passed last summer, maybe 3 weeks ago, is still being vetted by the University Council. So I'm not sure you completely understand what their implications are that. And maybe Polly can speak to that next week.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Oh, Representative Andrews? It could be for, please.
Well, you know
I'd
like to probably answer that question. It's not about names, it's about the IP address. We can link a name. If you're in the residence hall, then the IP address is associated with your role. So you or your roommate.
I think we need to take this issue seriously, and next week will be a lot of fact-finding and researching for us to see like how we need to respond to this. There has been a lot of legislation change, and it will affect us. And there are issues campus-related, but then it's also a national discussion. Should they be targeting campus communities? It's an easy target. There are a lot of issues involved, so we definitely need to have this conversation. So definitely be prepared next week with questions, and hopefully we'll get everything worked out. Okay. Moving on, were there any other, we now have announced a report, whatever it is, Student Assembly Finances Discussion by Representative Dylan Silk.
I just want to have some clarifications from members of the board, sort of sense of like questions to the government away, to permit the government to finance and foreign affairs, prime
minister,
etc.
What? Wait, sorry, before you continue, what's closed? No meaning to close doors. All executive meetings are open.
But, if you want to, people want to have a meeting,
just people.
I think it's important to
they're all open to everyone, but Jeff, bring it up now. Jeff.
Things I'll respond to, anyone else can respond. This is I don't know if this necessarily is an announcement report, so I don't know if this is the appropriate time. So what you need to do is if there's, let me make one thing clear. We don't set the budget. The assembly sets the budget. So anyone can motion to change the budget in any way, absolutely. But you do have to go through appropriations or Greg to bring up the proposal to change that part. I don't think you're alone in the sense that perhaps many feel that we should decrease that portion of the spending budget. That's great, but go through either appropriations or Greg.
That's why I think it's important that we get every week an update of what's happening in the city, because a lot of those guys don't necessarily have the specific issue for the design to go to those committees. And I think it's important that these are pretty important because it's a lot of money, you know, $500, like Brooks Brothers and Blazers. So I think it's important that we know, report every week how it's been spent, that way people are not necessarily inside the community.
Okay. So you want a dining, you want an expense report each week.
Not necessarily each week, but you know, maybe every sort of the fact, you know, again, you know, I was surprised to learn that we had spent so much money on an ad like that.
Okay. I will open this up to just a few comments, but this really isn't the appropriate time. Again, if you want to request something about the budgets or request a report, which you can, you're totally entitled to do that. You have to go through appropriations or Greg. And I mean, I'm not going to tolerate expense reports every week. I think that will take up a lot of our legislative time. That's not productive. But you can request any information, and you definitely should go through Greg on that. And I think Greg will accommodate anyone's request. I want to make one thing clear, because I want everyone to know this. There are no closed door meetings. Executive committee meetings are open and welcome. Everyone's welcome. That sometimes is, I guess, a better venue for a smaller group to hash things out before it comes to the assembly, whose time is a little more inflexible. But so just want to make that clear. I don't know if maybe perhaps I've communicated wrongly to you, and I'm sorry, but there's never anyone closed the door. Are there any questions? Yeah, sure.
I think maybe something that could help
the issue that you brought up is maybe if committees ask you to their meetings, they can just, I don't know if you're going to do this, but have reports in the email amount so we don't have to wait for meeting time.
Well, we have committee reports, really, after every meeting, you should be giving a committee report. But in regards to financials, that could be a great idea. And again, this definitely should be something discussed with appropriations so they can formally propose it to us. And I'll let Greg respond.
Just a couple of things. The budget that we passed was a working budget. I am having an appropriations committee meeting on Monday where we'll be going over a more in-depth budget to approve and then present at next week's assembly meeting. So that is in the works. The other thing, a half-page ad is only about $300, just to kind of clear that up. And then just the other thing, just to kind of comment about, you know, the ad and people not showing up, we can't make people come. But what we can do is publicize what we're doing and get it visibly out there. You know, if somebody reads, oh, look at the assembly's doing this, but says, oh, I'm busy, I can't go, but oh, look, that's great, and it builds kind of goodwill and a good feeling amongst the community, you really can't measure how effective a print ad is based on just the number of people that show up. I do, though, however, believe that we should watch our spending, and as I think several people on the executive committee can attest to, my kind of directness about how many Sun ads we're doing, are they effective, are they cost effective, all those kind of things. So I have asked those questions, so I do understand your concern completely, and I do think that we should be fiscally responsible with what we're spending. The other question that raises is, you know, people say, oh, we need to have food at the SA meeting. Well, quite frankly, is that really a good use of our money? Is it going to fill the seats? Is it something that we need to provide? Can we all just go at 6:30 down to the Ivy Room and have, you know, a meal with our constituencies on our dining plan or whatever it is? So those are the kind of questions that we ask when people try to propose new ideas. So I definitely think that we're taking a look at it. There will be more line item details. The budget that we passed is just a working one. We're trying to figure things out. We're doing so much more PR than we have in years past. You know, just putting the budget in place, and I think the resolution 10 that hopefully we get to today even goes to show, you know, the continued effort into making sure we're doing budgets and we're submitting them on time, we're doing midterm reports, and we're, you know, presenting it like it's a business financial statement almost.
Any other questions or comments?
Yes. No, Hi. Sorry, I totally appreciate you bringing that up. I mean, I understand. It was an expensive ad. Just kind of explain kind of the rationale behind why we did it. Basically, you know, we got this panel together. We had them come. We really were hoping to get a good audience for them. Unfortunately, by the time we finalized everything, we had about like a day and a half to do everything. So we felt that an ad would be a good choice just because it's a really quick way to get the word out. We did make a Facebook group, but there just really wasn't, you know, enough time. So basically, we did the best we could given the time circumstances. But I agree with you. I think that it's too expensive. And so I guess in the future, though, I'm more than open to suggestions. We are watching. Greg has been really great about making sure that we watch ads and all that. It has paid off in some respects. We had a really amazing election here, as you probably heard, and I think a big part of that was because we were really good about kind of making sure every student, every dorm had a court card, things like that, to get people to run. So I think that in some ways, I wouldn't say it's completely gone to, I don't think it's gone to waste at all. I think that was just kind of an unfortunate. Obviously, had I known that about these people were going to show up, there's no way I would have taken on the ad. Absolutely not. But you can never predict these things. So, but I appreciate your feedback, and I'd be more than willing to meet with you, you know, anytime to talk about it. Thank you.
So I'm just going to thank you for bringing it up, and I guess I would just then, Greg, either address this in a formal way, either bring the budget back up, and we could, you know, directly change it here at the NSA meeting or devote an appropriations meeting to it. But we definitely should bring it back up for discussion. I mean, we can't just, it's hard to compare what we do to a programming organization. It's very different dynamics, but we should bring it up, and I thank you for bringing it up. So, moving on. Okay.
Just a general comment, and I think it's like the quarter party for the communication. I think it's a good point on it'd be great if maybe not even an in-session report, but just a summary so that all of us know what is happening on the SAE. So that not only when somebody asks us a question, we don't know, oh, well, we're on the SAE, we have no idea if we're doing this. It also helps push us to say, to actually get things done, because, you know, if a committee is in a meeting and you don't see the reports from the committee, we can bring it up to the assembly to say, why is this committee meeting, or why haven't we seen any reports from the committee?
Can I? Real quick, Vincent, I'd ask every committee chair, and I've done it in like detail. I mean, it can take minutes, and the minutes I'll put on the website. I always email within a day, staff@assembly.cornell.edu to put them up. So in the future, once committees start meeting, they're always asked for their meetings online. They're very accessible.
Yeah. And thanks, Vincent. To reiterate again, committee chairs are expected to do that. That's an expectation. Minutes, reports, back to essay. Yeah.
Yeah, just a quick report. Emily and Nabby and I have come up with a freshman coffee hour during the weekend. And I give her a very extensive the presentations that we are now working on the budget. So after meeting, we will talk out with readers and everything about this issue.
Excellent. Great. Any questions about coffee hour? Great. I think that's great.
That's nice.
That's
very nice.
Okay. Any further announcements and reports?
I would like to make a motion to remove resolution 10 to the 11 speaking to the day.
We have a resolution 11 party.
Yes.
Can I see it? Is it a party?
No.
Okay, there's been a motion to move resolution 11 to business of the day. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any dissent?
I dissent.
Explain your dissent.
I think it's a really great idea, but like, as Lavin just pointed out, since Lahan didn't even know it was on the table, I just had a chance to read it. I think it's a great idea personally, but we only have 10 minutes left in our allotted time. I would love to give you guys more than 10 minutes allotted. I think that'd be more receptive to your resolution.
You withdraw your motion, or you want to keep it?
Well, I mean,
yes, Vince, you withdraw your
motion. Well, no, I mean, I really want to get people moving, so I'd like to keep it.
Okay. All right, so actually then we're voting to whether or not to move Resolution 11 to business of the day.
It has to be at 6:30, so the meeting goes over.
If it's new business, we're...
No.
Is this a charter change?
No.
I'm moving it to business of the day. Chair. However, we're starting with Resolution 10. Addition to the responsibilities of the Vice President of Finance, Greg Meggie. Quick announcement. Thank you. Medley.
All right. Just before I have the SAFC appeals will be next Thursday as per the guidelines that were set out. So if you can go online and make yourself familiar with the SAFC funding guideline handbook, maybe we can send out a link to where they are on the website. But just so you know, we're doing SAFC appeals next Thursday. The resolution plan, do you guys want me to read it, or do you know what it is?
I mean, it's pretty short. If you just want to read it, therefore, that'll be resolved.
Be it therefore resolved that the following amendment to the student assembly charter, Article 4, bylaw 4.2.c.4, of the responsibilities of vice president of finance, submit a budget to the student assembly to approve 1 month, 30 days of the federal transfer from the district and report to the assembly within 2 weeks, 14 days. Of the start of the spring semester. I mentioned behind this was the 30 days of the semester is the Vice President for Finance, some time to manage the system, come back to the university, get things figured out, hopefully get a small committee of interested parties together, put a budget together, working with the different committee chairs and all of that type of stuff, submit that to the assembly for approval, use that as a working budget, and then at the start of the spring semester, reevaluate where we are, show what our expenses have been, where we're looking to go, what we're looking to spend things on, how much money we have left, and just keep a more open dialogue and accountable way of managing our finances.
Speaking of this, Representative Sales.
Calls for acquisition.
going to call for acclamation.
Second.
Can we do a call for acclamation?
What?
Can we do a call for acclamation?
No, we cannot call for acclamation. Thank you. That's a charter change.
No, it's not.
Yes. Speaker is welcome.
Call the question.
You're going to call the question within a second. Is ready to say that? Okay, just 30 seconds to sum up, or you can just say pass. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Yes.
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 Not here. Not
here.
Yes.
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 Yes. Oh, God, he's already leaving the table.
Yes.
Time left.
We're so cocky, we're leaving the table mid-vote.
Okay, great. Resolution passes. Excellent.
Thanks.
Resolution 11. Essay Monthly Bulletin. Representative Andrews and D.P. Jewish. Clear, there was no amendment.
The important thing is this is just right. Trial one too.
Hold on.
This is a very preliminary resolution just to give us the go ahead to start. Do the first one. See what the result. And I just want to back to try and give you three out of it. A quick write up, rough draft. Might not look good. Do look something like that. Really just the trial run and try and make it more, concrete. Make something concrete. Get one out of the platform.
What did you say?
Get this down.
Excellent. Representative Cusick.
Have you discussed with the Sun at all the possibility of sticking it in there, or are we just kind of doing production at this point, helping them all?
We pay them.
I can speak.
Let me kind of show you this point, actually, because it's a great question. I think the first one we were going to do is we don't get this. Basically, if they know, we'll take a split and then we'll create a design on it or whatever. We'll put it really straight. We'll have our own kind of kiosk for it. So we'll do something like that. Good question. We'll see.
And apparently DP Mezzi has experience.
Yeah. With that. The Sun does take inserts. Basically, they charge you by the thousand. And if you do it monthly, it's about $115 per month per thousand. And you have to commit to a semester if you want any sort of frequency discounts for that to happen. And they will accept a maximum of 5,000 inserts. And then just, yeah, that's about it. I'll get back to my other points later.
Well, you actually mentioned it.
Okay. So the other point, too, is one, have we checked with the office to see if they can handle this type of copying? And then also, it's 2 cents per impression. So that means per side. So it would actually cost us 4 cents if we went through the Office of Assemblies per sheet. So just keep that in mind. And then if we were to do it on a semester, or on a semester, there's about, what, 4 newsletters? All right, okay, so that's about $460-some that we would spend with the Sun. Have you, what was my question? Have you asked the Assemblies about this, if they can print this, or is this something that they would outsource, or what would the case be?
I haven't talked to the Assemblies about printing this yet, and I didn't cross my mind that there would be a problem seeing how I'm actually thinking of starting the initial one small as 100 copies, and I'm sure the Assemblies are printing more than 100 copies registered right now. Mm-hmm. If the U.S. staff source is looking at that avenue about the leaflet, it might not include every issue of Daily, every issue of this. Maybe just the first one, saying, look, the Student Assembly is doing this. If you want to get more information, you know, look in Mueller Street Hall, that's what the rest of the week for the rest of the year.
Or it's been like a really big month for us, and that we choose to put that on it. So we're not going to be responsible with that at all. So.
The one thing that I maybe would encourage you to do to tack onto this is maybe provide some more information, is come up with more clear plan of, you know, who would copy it. The office says they can copy it. Here's how much this is. Here's what that's going to be. And here's kind of our plan to roll it out and keep it going and sustain it and all of that, just so that we have a little bit more information to go off of. That would be my only suggestion.
Representative Botello.
I actually have a really good idea of maybe putting it once or twice for the big issues in the Sun, because from a sustainability standpoint, I have a problem with that. So any idea of what kind of paper you guys thought about using? I feel like that's a question that you might ask. So I'm going to ask more.
What? Yeah. Sorry, no, I didn't know. Okay. That was pretty much the answer to the... what do you mean by type of paper? I'm sorry.
Kind of recycled paper or... It's more of a hard stock. Because sometimes they've had thicker paper in some of the inserts that circulate throughout.
I think...
It's a little paper that's like 4 feet wide.
Okay. New driver on, we've already started writing, you know, last month, and these issues can be tackled, you know, paper maybe simply doesn't have to, maybe their printers don't, can't use thinner paper and actually print it and whatnot. So we know that would be, when we do the actual printing. But, again, this resolution here doesn't restrict any of that. If anybody is dissatisfied with when the first issue came out, then everybody can give you, folks like, please change this one and then this one. They're acting on changes and don't like that, and that's why they're looking at that coming in this regard. That's great.
The current time is 6:31 p.m., which is our German time. Do you have any motions?
Motion to extend by 7 minutes.
Motion to extend by 7 minutes. Is there a second?
Second.
Any dissent?
Dissent.
Explain your dissent.
Dissent. Multiple people in the country letting me know that things that the UN has given preliminary examination, including myself, when we did have time to set up an executive session for other important matters. Again, I think it's a very, worthwhile thing, worthwhile for those issues on the table. I feel like we should give you guys more time to hash it out, and as an assembly, more time to hash it out in the future.
We'll now be voting on whether or not to extend. The clerk, please call the roll. We need a simple majority to extend.
My hand
is voting. We're going to do a hand vote. Please raise your hand if you want to extend the meeting by 7 minutes.
All opposed? Abstentions? Yes. 7 minutes, here we go. Next, are you done, whoever was speaking? Next on the speaker's list is D.T. Miller.
We'll take up 7 minutes. This is a great idea, don't get me wrong, on the paper. However, multiple people have brought up many kinks we need to work out. Also, this seems like something that would be a long-lasting, more permanent kind of change. Perhaps it should go in the charter. I feel like something of this magnitude, especially as budgetary concerns and office of the assembly burden, should be worked out to be a charter change. Also, this is, you know, this idea of filling, obviously, the beginning formation process, I really feel it would be appropriate to get together with a communications committee, maybe an ad hoc group, just to hash out the finer details, which many of the members have brought up. With these ideas in mind, I motion to table this indefinitely.
Dissent?
Indefinitely.
Well, they can bring it back up
enough. Sure. There's been a set of clear dissent.
I mean, I advised to Vince to bring this forward as a resolution, basically proposing a trial run. I don't think we should put anything into our charter that hasn't been tried before. So I think this is the exact thing that we want to vote on. I don't think this should be tabled because we're not going to put anything into our charter that we haven't tried. So I think this is perfect. We can see how it runs, and then we can reapproach it as a charter change.
I need to make a clarification because we're all discussing something, including the sponsors of the resolution, about a trial run. But is that in the resolution?
It's not. The resolution doesn't say trial run, no, per se. But okay. Again, I'd like to note that this resolution doesn't restrict any of the ideas that this assembly has put forward.
Right.
And if all it would do is give us a go ahead as a communications committee to print out 100 copies or however many the office of the assembly skills they can print out, just so that people at this assembly can see what the final version of it is to work, what the community feels, you know, how it's accepted. And I think it would be a grave error to delay this even further. I think it could represent something that is
I want to move on to the speaker's list. They ignore your motion for now, but I will move on to the speaker's list. But I want to make a suggestion. There's nothing stopping you from doing this. The communications committee can do this and submit a budget to MESI, and we're good. I would say a resolution is something formal, perhaps more long-term, that doesn't go on the desk of the president. Maybe this is something that we want to include all the kinks. Not to say that I understand where you're coming from, unless something formal. We want to get this going. We want this to happen. I understand that. But additionally, there isn't anything stopping the communications committee from going ahead and doing this. You don't necessarily need a resolution to go ahead and do it. You just need a part in the budget to do it. Moving on, Representative Engelmeyer.
Never mind.
Representative Smith.
I think this is a really good idea too. I was just wondering about the focus of the committee, if it was going to be like included in like university assembly or CPSA or like SCSD, or if it was just like resolutions, or what kind of focus do you envision?
I think at this point we were just thinking of having to be a student assembly on the focus, just because of the length that we wanted to include our money. I guess there would be kind of two aspects to it. One would be, you know, upcoming things and events, and I think we were thinking about giving and whatnot, and then resolutions would be in the past, and so we kind of had to have the
Representative Bill Armstrong. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there dissent? 30 seconds to explain the dissent.
I would just strongly urge, since this is a resolution and it is very formal, I would almost, you have $1,100 in your promotions budget. Go back, take this off for now. Go back, put a trial run together. I will work with you to formulate a budget and get the kinks out and work with the Sun and get a full detailed plan so that when we do bring this, so that if we do vote on this and it does go to the president, it is a very formal thing that we've thought through every little piece. I support what you're doing, but I think we should do it in a manner.
I guess we'll save much time. We'll table it.
Okay, further to the table. It's been motion to adjourn.
And that's the word.
So we're not going to go into that.
About what?
No. Okay. Can we just hand over to the DA?
Because I remember last year we were an online form and just submitted.
I
wanted to be able to have
that form. The form here is in the office. But what I want is spreadsheet of the expenditures, who they are, who they're going to, so you can check.
No problem.
Before, put that, I want that before the other thing.
Oh, of course. And then with regards to the travel,
yeah,
the way they've done it, can I just point out direction? You can apply that to all of them.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.